Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK, was sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy football. And we are back. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined bright and early in Toronto by Jeff Rimbold. Jeff, what time is it there?
5:15 in the morning, my man.
The early bird and all that catches the worm. So you're getting close to your season now, right?
Pardon me?
You're getting close to the season.
Yeah, we've got our opener on. We've through preseason now. We got our opener Thursday night. It's the first game of the year. It's against the Argonauts in Toronto, which is 45 minutes up the QEW from us. And it's a traditional rival game. It's like the Packers opening with the Bears, or you know, the Jets opening with the Patriots. It's one of those ones that all the focus in the country will be on this game because it's the only game on Thursday night.
Awesome. So prime time, spotlight, all of that stuff to get the season started. We are back after a week off. Apologies for that, but it was very, very difficult to technically make it work, Jeff, to be honest. I mean, logistically, it was bad enough with me traveling everywhere every different day, but technically, we couldn't get it done. So we're back this week, but I spent a couple of days with the Jags. One day with the New York Giants and then a day with the Washington Redskins. So it was, it's that time of year, Jeff. Everyone's got great hope and great belief.
Well, you know, and for a lot of guys, this is the best time of year because they get a little break here now after OTAs and coaching sessions and mini camps and all the grind of the off season. The players can get away, the coaches can get away, but there is no off season for us, Neil. I'm really curious to hear about your trip to Jacksonville and how much you think that roster has improved, and you know, again, how Fowler's doing on the field, and what did you see in Jacksonville?
Well, Fowler is one. Fowler was a lot like when I first watched, when I first watched Khalil Mack, Jeff. You know, you watch Dante Fowler, and you see that explosion off the edge. You see the athleticism. He's got a big old knee brace on at the moment, but that's going to come off as they get closer to the season. I think that's more of a kind of mental sort of comfort blanket for him. But incredible athleticism. Tashaun Gibson upgrades the safety position. They've got Prince Amukamara. They've got Malik Jackson. They've definitely improved. Everyone I spoke to kind of watching from the sidelines. So I stand on the sidelines, watch the practice, and I always get to talk to Tony Boselli, that great Jaguars offensive lineman. I stood and chatted to Jeff Lagerman, who played for the team as a defensive end. And they've seen every practice, and they've seen everything that's gone on. And, you know, there's no doubt that this is a team that, although you can't get Gus Bradley or Dave Caldwell to say it, there are enough players thinking it and saying that they should be a playoff contender this year. And Gus actually pointed it out to me, Jeff, when I interviewed him. We finished interviewing and we were chatting. And he said, "You've kind of been with this right from the start of our journey. You know, you've seen how our team has grown." And I said, "Well, you know, actually, when I first went to the Jags, I asked to do a stadium tour and we were going to film a locker room tour and everything. And we just said, well, we need the biggest name on the team. So we said, well, we better go Josh Scobie. That was the biggest name on the team, the kicker at that time. This past week, I went with, I think, a request to interview between 18 and 20 players. I mean, it just as an indication of what they've built there. But they, you know, like coaches play it very carefully. They don't want to put a number on it, but there's some belief there.
Well, you know, it's to me, it's really interesting to watch the way it's been built, Neil. You know, again, there was a lot of, you know, there've been grumblings the last 2 years about, you know, is Gus the right guy for the job? You know, do they need to blow it up and start all over? And I think this has been a really good job by the organization, sticking to a plan, staying with a belief system that they have, and trying to build. And you know, I'm hopeful that it works out for him because you know, certainly Gus has faced a long, tough stretch, and Khan's invested an awful lot of time and money and energy into seeing this team get back to being a playoff contender. And you know, in that division, you know, it's one of those divisions that they play in that anything can happen. So I'm excited to see that team play.
Yeah, a couple of other points from the Jags. Dave Caldwell said to me, Jeff, that we were in for a lot of free agents, but we weren't in for everybody. And we're not just going to spend the money for the sake of it. I thought that was quite telling when you talk about how this team has been built.
Yeah, and you look at the ones that they signed. You know, you're talking about impact guys like, you know, Malik Jackson comes in there, and you know, the more in my offseason study I looked at the Denver Broncos, the more I realized that he was maybe an unheralded piece in that defensive front. But man, oh man, can he play? He is disruptive. He's got great quickness and strength. He's a great pass rusher from inside, where it's hardest to rush from. You know, and then on the other side, they go out and get an offensive lineman in Kelvin Beachum that's been a starter at left tackle, which is the toughest position to play for the Steelers for a number of years. So, you know, those are two guys that just jump out at you right now as guys that, you know, certainly upgrade your roster. I think they've drafted well. They get Fowler back. It's a lot of reasons for optimism, I think, in Jacksonville.
Yeah, it was interesting the time I spent with Blake Bortles. I like Blake a lot. I think he's really handling being a franchise quarterback very well. He's got a great sense of humor when you get to know him. Very dry sense of humor, but he talked about Jeff how he's fearless. He said, 17 interceptions as a rookie, 18 as a sophomore, and he kind of accepts that he needs to cut that number down. That there's a fine line between being fearless and careless, but he also accepted that, you know, sometimes you need to chase a game and you've got to not be afraid to make throws. I think Bortles, as we go through the rest of his career, I don't think he's going to lose all of that gunslinger, even if he does try and take more care of the football.
Well, you know, obviously taking care of the football is an important part of playing quarterback in the National Football League, but there is, like you say, a fine line. You know, you look around at the guys that make plays. You know, Brett Favre threw a lot of interceptions.
Yep.
You know, Andrew Luck throws a lot of interceptions. If you just say, okay, go on sheer numbers. But they make an awful lot of plays, too. And those guys that are like that have that, you know, that belief in their arm, their belief in they're going to make the play. And if you're going to be that guy, if you're going to be that franchise guy, then you got to, you know, you have to have that kind of fearlessness and the ability to, one snap and clear when you throw one. You got to put it away and come back and learn from it, but not carry it in and be tentative. And all of a sudden now you're steering the ball, not throwing it, and the problem gets worse. So, you know, he's an interesting cat. You know, he's got, it was interesting when you watched him come out of in the draft. He had a kind of a maturity about him that few of them have at his age, especially coming out of a place like Central Florida. And, you know, I think he is one of the one bright young stars in the league at a tough, tough position to play.
I moved on to New York and got some time with Odell Beckham, who we had plenty to talk about last year when we spoke about Odell. And Jeff, he remains to me a little bit of an enigma. He is you sit and chat to him. I only got 6 or 7 minutes with him. He was the only one who was really on time constraints. He's the clearly the out of everyone I interviewed the one who's being most handled by his public relations staff and probably gets inundated with requests. So I understand that. But you sit with him for 6 or 7 minutes and you come away and you just say, what a great guy, what a nice guy. But when he first arrives, he's the only one out of everyone I interviewed who kind of acted like a superstar. We were waiting for the previous interview to finish. Odell's just laying on the floor, doesn't talk to anyone, comes and sits himself in the chair, and there's a little bit of an aloofness to him. But then when you start chatting to him, you open him up and you get him to engage. This is a good person who wants to be remembered the right way. He talks about work ethic. He talks about how he's had two good seasons, but he wants to remember for being great. He said to me he wants the greatness to kind of cancel out the nonsense, which is all the stuff where he's always in the spotlight. But he is a bit of an enigma, Jeff. And he did talk. I was surprised because I asked him about being in the spotlight. And I thought I'd get one of those kind of 20-second standard answers. It was almost like it gone on Oprah. It went on for about 3 minutes. I mean, it clearly weighs on him. He doesn't like the fact that it distracts from the team. But yet he still has some of those issues where he gets into fights and things. So it's kind of mixed messaging.
Yeah, it is. And you know, again, he's a young kid, and you're in, you talk about the spotlight, you know, you're talking about the New York media, and that maybe is the brightest spotlight, certainly in North America, maybe one of the most bright, most blinding spotlights in all of the world. And, you know, he gets put out there, you know, whether he wants to be out there or not, he gets put out there, and you know, but the thing that the kid's got to understand, when you wear your hair like you wear it, and you're out there like you're out there, you've got to accept that you're going to get criticism, and you're going to get, people are going to, you know, pass judgment. And, you know, again, it's a really difficult thing to walk. It's a really fine line to walk in terms of, you know, you want to be your own man. You want to, you say you don't want to disrupt from the team, but yet your behaviors sometimes do. And that's again what young players have to learn. And I hope over the course of his career and over the course of the guidance that the Giants will give him and the National Football League will give him, is he understands that that platform that he has can be used for tremendous good if, you know, he'll, if he will choose to use it that way. And, you know, when I hear a guy say, well, I don't like the fact that it takes away from my team, and then I see your behaviors be what they can be sometimes with him, a la the Josh Norman thing last fall, you know, then, you know, again, you got to say, okay, don't just talk about it. Let's be about it.
Well, there's a juxtaposition there, Jeff, because, you know, you kind of saw, I saw him talk about how he wants to be a role model and how he wants to do good. And I mentioned to him that, you know, I sit 4,000 miles away from where you are, Odell, and I sit and watch children practice American football on a Sunday morning. And I said, they're doing your one-handed catch. And he absolutely loved that. He said, well, I want to be a role model. And then he said, and I want kids around the country to have hair like me. And then, but then he kind of stopped himself and said, but he said, I know I've made myself a target as well. And that's where it's, you can't be one without the other, I don't think.
No, and that's exactly right. And yeah, and again, you understand that you're a target 24/7, you know, 365 days a year when you're out there like he is. And again, when you get out there and, you know, you recognize that you have such an international following, you know, it's how you handle yourself that really is, you know, the reflection of who you are. And again, I'm really hopeful because he could be, here's a guy with really an amazing amount of charisma. And, you know, it's interesting. You talk about that one-handed catch thing, and you know that's caught on all around. Everybody, you know, in at every level of pro football now, you're seeing receivers out there putting on their own little show before the game, and it's all a kind of a they mimic. They're trying to mimic the biggest, brightest star in the game right now at that position. And you know, again, great. That's all good. It's you know, again, but let's make sure that, and I think this is what the Giants have really got to guard against, that it always comes across, even if it's not genuine, that it comes across as genuine, that, you know, it's team first, it's all about the Giants first, not Odell Beckham first.
Yeah, and I think it only has to be a case of it not affecting Sundays, Jeff, because I spoke with Eli Manning, we sat and talked for quite a while, and we were chatting about how he's the only Manning left in the NFL, all of that stuff, but he said that the actual he loves reading about Odell on the gossip pages because it gives him ammunition in the locker room. And
The locker room could be an unforgiving place. So if you're out there, you know, if they're out there on the back pages of the New York Post, you better get ready.
Eli said that there's a reason why Odell's on the gossip pages and Eli's on the sports pages, because one of them's 35 and the other one's 23, Jeff.
I think there's a little bit difference in the way they live their lives.
I think so as well. I think so as well. I moved on to Washington for my last stop. I only spoke to head coach Jay Gruden and Kirk Cousins. Jeff, my only takeaway here, two takeaways. Both Gruden and Cousins said, you know, there is a feel-good factor about the Washington Redskins at the moment. But let's remember we went 9-8. There is work to be done. I think that's a good reminder for the Redskins as they go into the training camp and then the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, let's be realistic about you know what went on in that division last year. You know, the Giants struggled; they, you know, couldn't find their mojo, and Dallas gets hurt. You know, their quarterback gets hurt again, and Philadelphia went through the turmoil that they were all involved in. So it was the Washington Redskins year, and it was certainly a great year for Skins fans because they are now on the winning side and they've been back to the playoffs and all that. But I think it's a little early to anoint them as, you know, even, you know, division favorites. I think that division is really, really close, and I think it's going to come down to who can stay healthiest and get a few bounces along the way. But I think it's going to be a great division because those are all that you talk about a league or a division, excuse me, with traditional historic rivalries. Oh my gosh, every game you play in that division is a battle, you know, and has history behind it.
This is my other observation, Jeff, from Washington. So this was the last day of minicamp. So as we've talked about before on this podcast, when the teams were done there, they get 5 weeks, sometimes six. It's about 5 or 6 weeks before training camp begins. So this is schools out for summer. So I arrived in Ashburn, Virginia, which is where the Redskins practice facility is. I'm told to go into the car park. They said, don't park on the right-hand side. That's the players' car park. Park on the left. So as I'm driving up, the right-hand side is absolutely packed. Wall to wall, everywhere is packed with cars. Some beautiful cars, some huge big pickup trucks, all of the stuff you'd expect the players to be driving. And then we were doing the interviews up until 11, and then the players were off. Their meetings finished at 11, and then they were off. Kirk Cousins came out early. We finished the interview with him. Then we interviewed Jay Gruden. We finished and started packing up at 11:15. I'm telling you, that car park was virtually deserted. I mean, talk about cars pointing at the gate, engines running. That's how it was. And one other takeaway from this. I've mentioned all those nice cars. There was one beat-up old Dodge minivan that looks like it would be driven by a soccer mum. That belongs to the quarterback of the Washington Redskins, Kirk Cousins.
Well, I'll tell you what, he is his own man. But it's funny, Neil, you mentioned that because I was laughing. As you started to tell the story, I could visualize, because I've seen that so many times, of what it's like, because those cars were packed with, I'm sure, everything that those guys wanted to take with them wherever they were going for those 5.5 weeks. And they were looking at their watches in the morning, and in that morning meeting, saying, one more hour and I get the hell out of here for 5 weeks and away from these coaches and film and meetings and all this stuff. But, you know, I think the great ones, the guys that are smart, will take probably a week, maybe 10 days, and really decompress. And then they're going to get back at it, because you can't lose the edge that you gained over mini camps and OTAs and training sessions and all that, just going and laying on the beach for 6 weeks. That's the old ways, when they used to play themselves into shape when they got to training camp. Now, the way it is, the way training camp is, you better be in shape when you get to training camp.
Yeah, well, I was talking to Jags defensive end Jared Odrick. He lives up your way, Jeff. He spends his off seasons in Toronto. And he was saying that, I said, what are you going to do in your weeks off? He said, work out.
It's really what it's come down to, because they cannot, like I say, it's you just have to sharpen the blade on a daily basis. And it's the thing that they get away from is the meetings, the film, that kind of stuff. The tedium of it is as much a break as anything else. They most of them will find some way, whether it's some sort of cross training, some way to keep active during the off season. The ones that you have to watch are the big guys, because they have a tendency to find the nearest buffet line and pitch a tent.
Let's look at it from the coach's point of view, Jeff. I'm going to take this question out of the mailbag now. It comes from George Swift, who says, what are coaches doing when there are no players to coach daily at this time of year? And I saw this quote from Houston Texans head coach Bill O'Brien. He said, Jeff, it's our vacation time. We need to get a vacation. But he said, it lasts about a week before we all start turning to our wives and saying, we've got to get back to work. So how long do coaches take? I mean, they're not taking the whole 5 weeks off, are they?
No, most of them will take at least a portion of it off and get away and take their families on vacation. It's family time. But, let me just say this from my experience. I've seen an awful lot of wives after about five days with their husbands say, hey, don't you have to go back to work? Don't you? Aren't you? What the? You know, it's like Tom Coughlin's wife said, after he had been out of football that first time, after he got fired in Jacksonville, she said after about 6 months, she was calling teams saying, hey, I got a guy here you might want to hire. Get this guy out of my house.
You got to get him back in football. Absolutely.
Well, the tendency is you want to coach everybody, right? That's why that's a personality that you have. So you end up coaching your wife. You're coaching your kids.
Get him out of here.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our state of the franchise then. We've got just two teams left to look at. The Carolina Panthers went 15-1. They finished first in the NFC South. And, Jeff, this had all the hallmarks of being a historic season for the Panthers, a season for the ages. And then Super Bowl 50, not just any Super Bowl, but the 50th Super Bowl. The offense just got shut down. Cam Newton couldn't get anything going after his MVP year. We had the whole not diving on the fumble, the post-game locker room kind of sulks. I mean, it was just an unsavory end to what for a season that promised so much.
Yeah, and it's really unfortunate when you think about it. If you just remember the season for the last 60 minutes of football, it's certainly a disappointing, deflating season for Carolina. But you got to remember now, Neil, this is a team that a couple years ago wasn't in the playoffs and you know, didn't have a winning record. And there was an awful lot of talk about, well, you know, do we get rid of Rivera? Is Gettleman the guy to get us where we need to go? Why are we not doing this? Why are we not doing that? And quietly and in their own way, they have built a very good roster in Carolina. And, you know, Cam had one of those seasons. You know, they're still in some ways, I think, deficient in some areas. They need to, you know, they need to improve at receiver. That I just believe that Teddy Ginn, you know, will make plays for you, but he's not the consistent receiver that, you know, that you need. They've got to get guys back. Kelvin Benjamin and some of those guys got to get back healthy. Really, really good. You know, particularly when you talk about the front seven on defense, they're outstanding. How much is Josh Norman's loss gonna affect the back end of that defense? They're extremely well coached. They seem to have, I think when we were at the Super Bowl, you could sense they have a really good team chemistry. You know, they really like their quarterback in the locker room and out of the locker room. The coach is very, very defensive of his quarterback. I think they, you know, I think there's a good, you know, good, you know, interplay between those two guys. So, you know, Carolina's a good football team. And, you know, while I think they have some areas where they need to improve, I think their offensive line got exposed a little bit.
Yeah, Mike Remmers, Jeff, in the Super Bowl at right tackle.
Yeah, in the Super Bowl. I think that you know, you look at Michael Orr and Mike Remmers, you know, they're serviceable guys. They're not great players. And then, you know, inside they're, you know, they're well coached and they're technically sound and all those things. But when they got against really elite level pass rushers, they got exposed. And I think the other thing that people have to look at when they watch that film of the Super Bowl is just how well the secondary in Denver played against those receivers. That's why I say they need a go-to guy, somebody that can, you know, beat man coverage consistently and give, you know, give Cam an opportunity to get the ball, you know, against. They just got pressed on all over the field and couldn't get away from it.
Yeah, and I think Cam, Jeff, was truly special this year. I mean, I think we know what he used to be able to do running, but he was an accurate pocket passer. With games on the line, he was delivering time and time again. Lots was made of the dancing and the laughing, but he was having fun. You could just see he was having fun and he was enjoying the spotlight. And I don't think this was because he showed up so much in big games last year. I don't think it was a case that the Super Bowl was too big for him. I don't think he, you know, put the dive on the fumble to one side and all the stuff that made the headlines after the game. But I think, as you say, it probably wasn't necessarily that Cam played really badly in that Super Bowl. I mean, Denver's defense was dominant, and I would have challenged any quarterback to try and overcome that.
Yeah, and I don't think that their plan going into the game, I don't think they really appreciated just how good Denver was up front. You know, and they didn't have an answer. When Denver started loading the box and playing all that man coverage, they really didn't have an answer for it. And you know, the zone read stuff was out the window. They got behind early. It was really just one of those games. And you know, this is not to dismiss certainly not intended to take any of the shine off of the way Denver played. But there are going to be times in this game where it goes that way. And, you know, they didn't have the ability to make a play to turn the game for them. In every phase of the game, if you really analyze the game, in every phase of the game, they got beat. They got dominated. You know, Denver made plays in the long punt return when a guy really thought that they thought the play was over. I don't know what happened, whether he thought he heard a whistle or what, but if you remember the long punt return, they got the ball down in there very close. That was a turning point in the game because it produced a short field and points for a Denver offense that really didn't play all that well in the game.
If the receivers are fully healthy and Devin Funchess grows in his second year, then he's got two big-bodied wideouts there. He's got Greg Olsen, still one of the best tight ends in the NFL. Jonathan Stewart is still very serviceable as a running back. So the offense is going to score its points again this year, Jeff. I mean, we're kind of nitpicking here when we're looking for the areas of weakness with this team probably on either side of the ball. I mean, let's just finish up on the offense. Looks like they're going to score their points again this year.
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think they're going to take a step back, certainly. Yeah. And when you get the thing that, you know, you got to understand is Kelvin Benjamin comes in, you know, when he was a rookie, and there was a lot of speculation about, is he just a big guy that's an athlete? You know, a little inconsistent as a catcher at Florida State. He made some, you know, he made some real fine plays as a rookie. Now you got to believe that a year older, a year stronger, a year more around the NFL game, even though he's coming off an injury, he should be another step better in his development. And again, you talk about Funchess. That is two big targets outside. Olsen is one of those rare tight ends that can, you know, that you can flank out, and he can beat DBs in coverage. He's also a decent blocker. He's not a great blocker, but he's a serviceable blocker. They're going to run the football. That's the, you know, that's their thing. They're going to run the ball. They're going to, you know, the quarterback gives you that added dimension in the run game that you have to prepare for on defense. So there, I agree with you, Neil. This is a team that will score points, particularly against teams that, you know, have some weaknesses in the secondary and can't just, you know, man them up and load the box to stop the run.
Offense was 11th overall, second in rushing, 24th in passing. Flip over to the defense, 6th overall, but Jeff, first in the NFL in taking the football away. I mean, we've talked about some of the front seven, Luke Kuechly, K'Juan Short, Thomas Davis, Coney Ealy emerges in the Super Bowl with 3 sacks. So, you know, this is a defense that, even with that, I mean, it was a bit of a shocking scenario with the Josh Norman stuff kind of coming out of the blue. I spoke to Jay Gruden last week about it in Washington. He said no one saw that coming. We acted really quickly and managed to get Josh Norman. But I think the Panthers feel they can still overcome that loss.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. You know, it was the way the kind of message came out at the end. You know, that I think everybody was surprised, certainly, that they basically just got rid of him. And you know, there, it's that old saying, Neil, where there's smoke, there's fire. And you know, you're talking about an elite level player that had a very difficult position to find players. You know, you don't find, quote, there are no shutdown corners, but he has that title. There, he's a very, very good corner. And you just don't give those guys away for nothing. And, you know, that's what Carolina chose to do. So I'm sure there was something inside the walls of that organization that made them say, hey, we're ready to move away from this guy. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they fill that void, you know. And again, you've got a couple holes in that secondary from last year that they're going to have to fill. But anytime you have a front seven that can play the way their front seven can play, and Sean McDermott, the defensive coordinator, does a great job of not putting his back end guys into things that they can't do. For example, if you look at the Super Bowl game, you look at what Denver and Wade were able to do, because they could, you know, they have Tlaib and they have those guys that can just come down there and press you all over the field. Carolina doesn't have those kinds of guys, but their scheme doesn't require those kinds of guys. So, you know, they get an awful lot out of Davis and Kuechly. I'm talking, Neil, a lot out of Davis and Kuechly. Kuechly may be as good a pass defense linebacker as there is in the game today, because he just has a sense of where the ball's going to be. And we've watched tape together, and, you know, as we were preparing for broadcast, and the guy's, he's you know, you look at the structure of the coverage, and he's making plays outside the structure of the coverage, just like Ed Reed used to do in Baltimore, because they have such great anticipation about where the ball's going to go.
You mentioned other holes in the secondary. Of course, Roman Harper not there anymore at safety, so Dean Marlowe is listed as the other safety alongside Kurt Coleman. Jeff, it's going to be difficult for this team to go 15-1 again, but are they a Super Bowl contender still in your mind?
Well, as long as you have a quarterback like they've got, and you know, again, they stay healthy, and that, you know, again, all of the things that you know, that you need to have happen to get you to the Super Bowl. I think, you know, you look at the profile of a championship football team, Neil, and I think this is really, you know, there are about 7 things that you need, and you know, you got to have talent. They got talent. You got to have coaching talent. They've got coaching talent. You know, they have to have motivation. Well, certainly this team will be motivated to come back and show that they're a great team. They seem to have a great team chemistry, a great team attitude. So you start nicking off those little points about all the seven profiles of a championship team. And then the seventh one is you got to have some breaks. You got to be healthy, and you got to get the ball to bounce your way a couple times. And that's what happened for them last year. And if they can, if that can happen again, there's no reason. I don't think 15-1, certainly, but I think this is a very, very good football team.
All right, let's move on to the last team in our State of the Franchise series then, the Super Bowl champion Denver Broncos. And what a roller coaster year it was. They start off with Peyton Manning. He then gets benched and injured, or injured and benched, whichever way you want to look at it, in a four-interception game against Kansas City. Brock Osweiler comes in and plays seven games. Then there's a five-turnover display in Week 17, and back comes Peyton Manning to lead them in the playoffs. I said after the first round of the playoffs, Jeff, as you'll remember on Sky, that they need to bench Peyton Manning or play lights-out defense to win the Super Bowl, and they played lights-out defense in my mind. That was how they won this Super Bowl to start with. It was quite a year for the Broncos.
Yeah, and I'm telling you what, it's been quite an off season.
Yes, it has. Well, you always talk about how hard it is to keep a Super Bowl team together, and the Broncos are a perfect example of that.
Well, yeah, because everybody wants theirs, and that's what happens when you win a championship. Everybody wants theirs. It's the natural kind of progression of things, and obviously, you guys want to get paid. You got guys that you're going to lose in free agency because. You know, everybody wants the players off the Super Bowl team. And so you look at a Malik Jackson, who's a really, really fine football player, and they just can't afford to keep him. And, you know, then you go over to the other side and you lose who, you know, kind of your incumbent quarterback, the one that you've kind of groomed to be the guy after, you know, you lose Peyton, and he decides to go. And there's another, I think, some indication that there was some turmoil there, because not only did Brock choose to leave, and, you know, people can say, well, he didn't want to take the pressure of being, you know, after Manning and all of that stuff. But I think a couple things were kind of enlightening as we looked at the offseason. When a guy chooses not to go to the White House with his teammates to meet the president, you know, that's an unbelievable honor to have the opportunity to do that, and to turn it down, and then to turn down the opportunity to go to the ring ceremony. And so, you know, again, I think you can see there's little bits of the way this thing's going right now with Von Miller, and, you know, some of the negotiations in the off season. You know, I'm not sure it's all that friendly right now in Bronco Nation. And that's tough. You know, you got a corner who goes out and gets shot in a nightclub. You know, and John frankly has, you know, really put an awful lot of stress on that team in the fact that, you know, he knows the value of a quarterback. Shoots, he was one of the best to play. He led that team to Super Bowls. And, you know, to think that Mark Sanchez and an unproven rookie, although I think this guy has a great opportunity to be a great quarterback, Paxton Lynch, you're putting a championship team in a tough situation to bounce back with those guys at quarterback. That's a tall order, and an awful lot of that is going to fall on the defense. And if they can't get Vaughn signed, and he says he won't play, for what they're offering him, you lose him off that defense, and Malik Jackson, and, you know, how well is Tlaib going to come back from that gunshot wound? There's a lot of questions in Denver.
Well, let's talk. We'll talk in a second about Osweiler, and I think actually Osweiler was there was something there, Jeff, because he could have taken $16 million a year for the Denver Broncos, and he chose $18 million. Now, you could say, okay, well, he took the money, but a lot of players don't take the money to stay in a good situation. So he wanted out of Denver. I think we're seeing that as the offseason has unfolded. Denver at the moment have said that it's neck and neck between Trevor Siemian and Mark Sanchez. So it looks like it's between those two, with Paxton Lynch kind of bringing up the rear at the moment. So before we get into some of the roster there, I want to just go back to John Elway, because John Elway is built up this kind of in Aussie we trust, you know, the Aussie Newsome stuff, because you do a lot of good things and it works out. And Elway has done a lot of good things. You know, he He jettisoned Tim Tebow when everyone wanted to keep Tebow. He managed to sign Peyton Manning. That delivered another Super Bowl. But sounds like, I think he's quite a tough negotiator. It sounds like last year there was sort of trying to force Manning into retirement. There's this stuff with Von Miller now. And obviously they clearly misplayed the situation at quarterback because, you know, they thought Osweiler was going to stay. And suddenly they were scrambling and Sanchez is the stopgap. But the big one is Von Miller. But, you know, Elway seems to be willing to play hardball from time to time.
Well, it's the, you know, John's a very smart guy. You know, you don't go to Stanford because you're a dummy. He's a smart guy, and he has got the toughness. He seems to be willing to, you know, one of those guys that's not going to be pressured by the media or expectations or anything off of what he believes is the right thing to do. The interesting thing will be, as we go forward, is will this be the right decision? You're talking about Trevor Siemian now. Mm. That's not exactly a household name leading your football team. And, you know, Mark Sanchez has over two, you know, where he's been twice, two places in his career, hasn't been able to, you know, show that he's a guy as a leader in the National Football League.
So, Jeff, is that just confidence, supreme confidence in the defense? And that, you know, there was even a story on the Broncos' own team website earlier in the offseason, which got quickly taken down, but it said that they won the Super Bowl with near replacement level quarterback play. So that, I mean, they took it down pretty quick because it was damning of Peyton Manning. But is that a belief, such a strong belief that they have in their in their defense, that they can win it all like they did last year? But I would argue that you're not going to win it all every year unless you get some decent quarterback play.
I agree. I don't think there's any question. And you know, let's look at the realities, not the fantasy world that sometimes we can live in. You know, Peyton Manning is one of the greatest that's ever played the game. There's no question about that. But if you look at his play and you analyze his play down the stretch, they did not win games because of him. They won games in spite of him.
Yep.
And, you know, that sounds harsh and hard to say when you're talking about one of the greatest of all time. But the reality of it is that's the way that they won football games. They had the ability to run the ball. They got turnovers. The defense played lights out. Now, what happens if you get nicked on defense? What happens if you can't get Von Miller signed? Mm. What happens if Chris Harris gets hurt again and misses three or four games? So all of those things are, you put so much pressure on one side of the ball to deliver. And really it's two sides of the ball because now the special teams have to create field position for you like they did in the Super Bowl with the punt return. They can't give up, you know, they can't give up yards. You can't have any misplays on the other two sides of the ball. You know, there's an old coaching saw that you got to win all three phases, offense, kicking. If you win two of the three, you're going to win most games. Win all three, you win every game. Well, now you're putting tremendous amount of pressure on those other sides and, you know, on your playmakers to make plays. Who's going to get the ball consistently to, you know, Emmanuel Sanders? Who's going to get the ball outside, you know, to Thomas? Who's, you know, how much is the loss of the tight end going to effect? But there's some real questions in my mind in Denver.
There are some questions, Jeff. We're running out of time. I know we've got to get you to the practice field, and I want to get a couple of mailbag questions. But two people I want to talk about, and then we'll wrap up with the Denver Broncos. This Von Miller stuff is fascinating. He said on social media, he said, there is no chance I play the 2016 season under the franchise tag. He wants at least $60 million guaranteed in his next contract. Denver are offering around $38 million guaranteed. The Broncos have just re-signed linebacker Brandon Marshall. They're working on a long-term contract with Emmanuel Sanders. So are they going to stand firm? This is a game of chicken. They franchise-tagged Von Miller. He either has to play under that tag or sit out the entire season. He wants to be the highest-paid non-quarterback in the game. This is going to be, we say it's a quiet time in the NFL. Here's something to watch for the next few weeks.
You know, John Elway is probably cursing Fletcher Cox because when a guy like Fletcher Cox signs a six-year deal for $63 million, it sets the bar in negotiations because, and rightly so, how can you justify that contract and you've got the best defensive player maybe in the game right now, certainly at his position, I think he's the best defensive player in the game right now, and not pay him as the best defensive player in the league. And, you know, these guys recognize their value. And will he say, that's a strong statement to say, I will not play under the franchise tag. Now, he may choose to do that because he's a little bit of a different guy now.
Mm-hmm.
He's not, you know, he's his own mind. He's his own man, and he thinks and says and does things, you know, that Von Miller wants to do. And now, you know, would he sit out? Maybe. Mm-hmm. But that's now, we're now into a, you know, multi-million dollar game of chicken between, you know, between Broncos and Von Miller. And it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
One other guy, Jeff, I want to talk about quickly. Demaryius Thomas had 105 catches, 1,300 yards. But when I was writing my Touchdown Magazine season preview, I actually put him on the hot seat for the Denver Broncos. He called last year the worst season of his career. He was third in the NFL with dropped passes. But for me, here's my worry. He disappeared in the playoffs. Just 7 catches, 60 yards, and no touchdowns in 3 playoff games. I was down on the field in the Super Bowl, you know, as you know, on the sidelines. I now am worrying that this big-bodied wide receiver can't handle physical coverage. I don't know if he can get off the press.
Well, that's really interesting because that's the thing that you would think he would be, you know, dominant as.
Right.
And I don't think there's any question now that Emmanuel Sanders has surpassed him and is now the number one option when you look at that Denver offense.
Yep.
And, you know, I think Thomas still has game left in him, Neil. But, you know, it's an interesting thing. Sometimes, you know, it's almost like he appeared to be not distracted, but just didn't really compete like you would expect a dominant receiver to compete, you know, and he needs to have a bounce back here. I think that's one of the things when I look at this football team, I say, okay, now transitioning now into who's going to be the number one. Is it going to be Emmanuel? Is Thomas going to bounce back and have the kind of season that, you know, we fans, certainly Bronco fans and all of us are fans of the game, expect that guy to have, because he's an extremely talented and athletic wide receiver. So again, one of the fun things to watch as we go forward into the new season.
It's tough to put a number on the Broncos season, Jeff, isn't it? Because there's too many unanswered questions at the moment. We don't know if Von Miller's going to sign. We don't know how healthy Talib is. We don't know who the starting quarterback is. I have my doubts that they can repeat as Super Bowl champions, but I'm sitting with a couple of preview magazines that I picked up in the States saying they're going to finish third in the AFC West with a 9-7 record. I don't know if I'd buy a fall that dramatic either, but I don't know if this is a Super Bowl team now.
Well, think about the division, Neil. I mean, you're talking about a division with two rising teams, both Kansas City and Oakland, that, you know, have opportunities to be, I think, very, certainly, you know, the hardest thing when you get to the top is to stay on top.
Yep.
And, you know, I think Denver's experiencing that right now. The thing that'll be best for Denver is to get back to football, get back to training camp, get back to put all this off-season stuff, all the, you know, the parties, the parades, the ring ceremonies, the visit with the president, all of that, all the controversy, all the negotiation, get all that behind you, and let's move on to the football season.
Well, listen, before you go off to coaching mode and get your gallon of coffee to get you started, 2 questions in the mailbag, Jeff. Can we do two questions in the mailbag?
Yeah, let's do them.
All right. Cameron Hogwood, Jeff, asks, the Giants are looking to improve on third down. How does a team go about trying to do that? So, Jeff, is this a personnel thing? Because they drafted Sterling Shepard, a slot receiver, or do you get better on third down by doing better on first and second down? Is it a personnel thing?
Did you say that guy is Sterling Hogwarts? Is he the guy from, like, the school, Hogwarts?
Sterling Shepard. The person who asks the question is Cameron Hogwood.
Oh, I thought you said Hogwarts. I was going to go, wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that would have been better.
No, I tell you what, you know how you get better on third down?
Go on.
Do better on first and second.
That's what I thought.
Don't get yourself into third and you know, tough. You know, third and 6, third and 8, third and 10.
Yep.
That's how you get better on first down. Yeah, I mean, when you look at the game, really, first down is such a critical down because that really allows you, or you know, it creates flexibility on your second and third down calls if you can get four. If you can get four on first down, you got a great opportunity now. Now you're not looking at those tough downs where the defense can gang up on you. You preserve the ability to run and throw the football. So I think balance is the best, is the number one thing. And then when you look at your third down offense, and you know, it's an interesting question because really as coaches look at do their off-season research and you know, plan for the season, you know, you start talking about sub packages, your third down packages, your nickel coverages, you know, all the things, your five receivers, your, you know, whatever it is you're going to do. And then there's a certain amount of, you know, study that goes into that. And I'm sure with the Giants, what they're not only looking at, how do I improve on first and second down, but when we get into those third down situations, when we have to get third and eight, what are we doing? Look at our blitz controls. How do we protect the quarterback so that he can, you know, get the ball outside of the receivers? How are we beating? Typically in those downs, you see, you know, what we call two-man coverage, how we beat two-man, all the formations, motions, all of that stuff is what coaches spend hours and hours and hours on in what we call research and development in the off season. So that's a great question.
Yeah, and just to back up what you said, Jeff, you know, both sides of the ball, the Giants struggled to run the football, so they put themselves in third and long and on defense on third down. You know, you want to get after the quarterback. The Giants had 23 sacks in 16 games. Let's take one more question from the mailbag. Tom Knight says, should Rams fans be worried about the stories regarding Jared Goff being a long way away from starting, or is it just being blown out of proportion?
Therein lies the real, real dilemma when you start talking about taking a kid like he is.
Yep.
Now, again, a lot of expectation, a lot of pressure, a lot of people are going to look at him, and no matter what he does, unless he, you know, is just lights out as a rookie,
especially when you give up so much.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of second guessing, and I think that they got to be patient with this kid. You know, you look at him physically, Neil, and one of the things that is a little bit concerning to me, he reminds me of Sam Bradford in some ways. Very accurate as a college quarterback in a system where he was in the shotgun all the time and threw it all over the yard. How's he going to adapt to being underneath the center? The best thing there are two things that I think will really help his development. Number one is Jeff Fisher has been through this before with Todd McNair, you know, where you had a rookie quarterback and he's got to go in and play. And, you know, he knows how to not protect him physically in terms of the pass protections and all that, but how to protect him call-wise. And they play great defense, and they got Todd Gurley. And those two things will help this young quarterback more than anything else. But, you know, you're talking about we talked about the New York media. Well, you know the L.A. media. And
oh, yeah.
There's going to be a huge, huge expectation on this kid. And I think Rams fans have got to understand they need to be patient with him a little bit.
I'm interested. I'm going to be at Rams camp at the start of training camp, and I'm going to visit the Colts and Bengals. But I want to go and see Goff and also see what kind of attention is being placed on him, Jeff, because, you know, Stan Kroenke is going to want to hit L.A. running. He's going to want to make a splash. He doesn't want to open the season with Case Keenum at quarterback, but there might become a time where Jeff Fisher says, I very much want to open with Case Keenum, and Jared Goff is not ready. And that is going to be an interesting dynamic to watch, how the ownership and the coaching staff and the players on the field all kind of mesh together.
Yeah, and they want – one of the reasons they took him was they want a face of the franchise.
Yeah.
And he is the – I mean, if it works out, he's the perfect guy. He's a California kid. He's got the good looks. He handles himself well in the media. But, you know, Bill Parcells said this to Tony Romo, don't be a rock star quarterback. Mm-hmm. And that's what they – that is the delicate – balance that an organization has to do, because they'll want to get him out in the media. They'll want to get him in the community. They'll want him to be out there because they're trying to build a fan base in LA. But the more he's out there, the more it detracts from his, you know, his football development. And, you know, the coaches are pulling on one side and the business office is pulling on the other side. And that's, you know, that's again how this organization handles this will be a really, you know, would be a really enlightening thing about, you know, how the Rams really are structured, because Jeff Fisher knows you got to protect the kid. You got to protect him from the expectations. Mm-hmm. You got to protect him from the spotlight. You got to protect him from, you know, the distractions that are always out there for a multi-million dollar young athlete in a market like L.A. Because right now, think about L.A. right now, Neil. The Lakers are terrible.
Right.
The Dodgers are struggling. This kid will be everywhere in L.A.
Just
right? He will be the biggest star in L.A. before every throws a pass. And yeah. That's a heavy burden.
And Jeff, this is mini camp is when the plays are kind of installed, but he's going to have a lot of training camp practices. He's going to have four preseason games. I mean, there's still time for some catching up to be done.
No, yeah, and he will catch up. And you know, again, every rep he takes, every minute he spends in the film room watching tape and learning and being around his teammates, all of those things are critical. And that's where I think they need to insulate him a little bit as much as they possibly can from all of the outside stuff that will only serve as distractions. And you know, we've seen it happen before with guys where they come in and. You know, David Carr, for example, when he came to Houston, he was going to be the Messiah. He was going to lead them to the promised land.
Yeah.
And it just got to be too much for him. And you know, he never developed into the quarterback that his draft status and his, you know, his arm and all the things that, all the expectation when he came out of Fresno State, everybody thought he was going to be the next great one. Mm. And it never happened for him. So, you know, again, I think that the Rams are, you know, if they're smart, they'll keep him out of as much of that as they can, and they'll shelter him and you know, let him become a star when it's time for him to be a star.
I still hope they give me an interview with him, though.
No, I think I think
shelter him that much.
You have become iconic in North America. You're the blazing Brit when you come over here, and there is not an interview you can't get.
Right. Well, I've got Odell, so you know, after that. I managed to get Odell Beckham, so you know, I'd like to think that's the case. I don't want him to shelter Jared Goff too much. You know, I agree with you. I think he's got to be careful, but it, you know, I'd rather he played badly and gave me an interview.
I choked on my coffee.
Yeah, like I've said before, Jeff, there's no I in team, but there's one in Neil.
It's all about Neil.
Right, we're done. Listen, we've kept you long enough.
You're one of those divas, I tell you.
I just try and hide it. I just try and, you know, the swag is there. It's just deep, deep down.
You know what? You were like probably like somehow connected to Odell when you guys were talking, and you he said, no, I don't like the fact that it distracts from the team. And you sat there and thought, yeah, I know what you're saying, brother.
Yeah.
We have to say that's the kind of stuff, but you know, it's really all about us.
Well, you know, if you go back, Jeff, you'll find pictures of me with hair like Odell Beckham.
Oh, get the frick out of here.
You'd have to go way back to when I was about 3 years old. Listen, we've kept you long enough. Good luck on Thursday.
All right, man. I appreciate it. You guys take care. It's great to be back and doing this, and I'll see you next Tuesday.
All right. So until next week when we'll be back on Inside the Huddle, I know it's the quiet time of the NFL, but me and Jeff will find plenty to talk about to keep you going until training camps begin. Until next week, say goodbye, Coach.
I will say it after I say this. BT Sport, watch. We are on Thursday night. You can watch us in the UK, Ticat Nation UK. It's Aloha.